Criminal Justice Subcommittee will come to order. Lindsay, please call the roll.
Chair Trunell.
Here.
Vice Chair Barnaby.
Here.
Ranking Member Raynor Goolsbee.
Present.
Representatives Abbott.
Here.
Baker.
Here.
Brackett.
Here.
Gracie Davis has been excused. Brannon. Brannon.
Here.
Costello.
Here.
Garcia.
Present.
Gottlieb.
Here.
Jock.
Here.
Michael has been excused. Plakin.
Here.
Silvers.
Here.
Stark.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
Yarkowski.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. I want to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Also, as a reminder for members and presenters, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you are speaking and off when you are finished. I would also request that if you plan to have a public appearance, if you fill out a card before the committee. Today, we'll be considering the following five bills: HB 95, Rights of Law Enforcement Officers and Correctional Officers; Controlled Substance Testing, Interference with Sporting and Entertainment Events; HB 329, Electronic Monitoring of Persons Charged with or Convicted of Offenses Involving Schools or Students; HB 603, Exploitation of Vulnerable Persons. The first bill for consideration today is HB 95, Rights of Law Enforcement Officers and Correctional Officers, by Representative Duggan. Representative Duggan, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, your staff analysis does a fantastic job of explaining the constitutional framework around these exculpatory evidence issues, U.S. Supreme Court cases, the Brady case and the Giglio case. So I'm not going to get into that detail. All I will say with that base of knowledge that you got from that staff analysis, what this bill does is establishes due process for officers before being placed on a Brady list, gives them a right to present facts or evidence for consideration by the prosecutor in the circuit who has or wants to place them on a Brady list. It does not stop a prosecuting agency from placing an officer on the list. It does not stop the officer's employing agency from investigating, disciplining, demoting, or firing an officer for the underlying issue that placed them on the list, and addresses situations where some judicial circuits, namely the prosecutor in those circuits, were placing officers on Brady lists without their knowledge, and attempts to address issues where officers were being disciplined solely based on the fact that they were on a Brady list, not because of an investigation of the employing agency. That is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Members, questions on the bill? Ranking Member Goolsbee, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Duggan. I do have several questions. And Mr. Chair, do you mind me being recognized for a series of questions, or would you like me to go through the chair?
Yes, that's fine.
Thank you. All right, Representative Duggan, I had an opportunity to read your bill, and I have a question about part of this, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that part of this bill would require state attorney offices to have maybe a separate unit or separate agency or separate attorneys assigned to kind of review these cases. If that is the case, how are these agencies going to be funded to do that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, that's incorrect. The bill doesn't require that. Obviously, they go through prosecutors who want to have a Brady list or engage in the Brady analysis are doing that anyway. So this doesn't add any new requirement that they aren't already conducting or engaging in. And the bill also doesn't require them to keep a Brady list if they aren't or don't want to or are and want to stop. So that analysis is already being undertaken by them. So I don't see that it's going to require an additional fiscal. The bill provides on all the notice provisions that electronic mail is sufficient, right? So I wouldn't think there's going to be an additional administrative burden that they're already not already going through if they want to engage in this Brady analysis.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much, Representative Duggan, for that answer. So when I'm thinking about this process and I'm thinking about law enforcement agencies working with state attorney offices and also probably unions, and because I believe that your bill talks about allowing other stakeholders that would have interest in this coming together, how do you foresee that there not being any sunshine issues, meaning that if this is going to be a quasi-administrative process, or is this going to be a process that officers are undertaking? How do we think about the public being able to have access to these, to this process?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not certain that the current Brady analysis process is subject to the sunshine. I suspect there's an exception for that. The administrative procedures that the bill would provide for notice and opportunity to be heard will likely be governed by the collective bargaining agreement with the union. So to the extent that's public, I think nothing in this bill would change that, nor really is there an intent on my part as the sponsor to have those discussions in the shade.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that answer. I guess my question is, and to narrow it, it seems that this is creating a formal administrative process. And if this is creating a formal administrative process where I think we can agree there hasn't been one before, it's kind of if state attorney offices have had this process, they kind of just do what they do and there's no actual due process. So if it's creating a formal administrative review process, how does that not then come under the sunshine? And then if it comes under the sunshine, how does it not violate, you know, attorney, you know, work product and things of that nature?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So it's not a formal administrative process as it relates to Chapter 120.
Okay.
But there will need to be certain safeguards and put in place in a process to have a discussion with the state attorney based on the state attorney's initial analysis. With respect to attorney-client work product issues, whatever the allegation is against the officer would not be subject to any kind of attorney-client privilege. I mean, the allegation will have been that the officer did something improper. That won't be subject to any exception to Chapter 112. It's not going to be subject to any attorney-client or work product privilege because the allegation will have been made. I mean, now, there are labor and employment type and collective bargaining type protections that I'm sure apply during the pendency of an allegation around, you know, workplace behavior, if you will, where that might be protected from disclosure under existing laws or regulations. But this bill, again, does not and is not intended to create any shielding or veiling of any of those behaviors or discussions.
And just one more question.
You're recognized.
One more question for now. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Duggan, do you know how many offices in the state of Florida maintain a Brady list?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I do not. And I'm not sure, the staff analysis does not expressly states that it's unclear how many how many circuits of the 20 maintain a formal list.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing no more questions, are there any amendments? No amendments. Is there any public testimony? We have some public testimony. We have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. We have Nisha Rose Hines, ACLU of Florida, an opponent. You wish to speak? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee, the ACLU of Florida. I'm here to represent them. We're concerned with the burden this might put on prosecutors. As mentioned, Brady Giglio lists are often informal and simply help the procedural process in criminal court for prosecutors' offices to have a list of individuals that they already know might have an issue with credibility or candor. So this simply simplifies operations in the state attorney's office. We would be concerned that this is putting an unnecessary and it seems pointless process in place, because as mentioned, it's not really if, it's constitutionally under the Supreme Court cases, you have to disclose Brady Giglio information. So a Brady Giglio analysis has to happen, not if it happens, but when it happens. Any information under a Brady Giglio analysis would have to be disclosed. So this would just eliminate the list that simplifies this process that is going to have to happen regardless. So it seems to almost put a pointless procedural barrier on prosecutors. And that's why we are opposed to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Jonathan Weber, SPLC Action Fund, wishes to speak.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jonathan Weber, and I'm the Florida Policy Director for the SPLC Action Fund. Unfortunately, we cannot support this bill today, and I do urge you to vote no. While we have numerous concerns about the bureaucratic and financial burdens this bill may place on the various and unknown entities that keep Brady lists, I'd like to focus my comments on two sections of the bill that we think need immediate improvement. First, in Section 1, lines 46 to 50, this is the section that defines what a Brady list is and what type of behavior qualifies. The current language is incomplete, and it is insufficient to rely on catch-all phrases or vagaries that could lead to poor interpretation. Racism, bigotry, and hate have played too large a role in our nation's history and the history of our law enforcement agencies, not to mention this type of behavior in the definition explicitly. Pennsylvania uses the phrase bias or prejudice toward any constitutionally protected group. Vermont also uses the phrase bias, and other states have similar phrases. I urge you to add language that explicitly captures the damaging impact that racism, bigotry, and hate have on officers' ability to do their job. Also, as other states and jurisdictions have done, you may want to consider to add language about excessive force or abuse of authority in this definition as well. Those are just a few examples, but I am sure there are more. Before this bill moves any further, I do recommend soliciting feedback from a work group of prosecutors, defense attorneys, and even possibly community advocates to increase transparency and ensure plain, direct language. I also want to mention one other section of the bill on lines 176 to 183. This section automatically removes an officer from a Brady list entirely because they've been asked to be reconsidered. After that reconsideration period, the officer may or may not be put back on the list. However, at the same time, just down below that section, the bill says that this section does not limit the duty of a prosecuting agency to produce Brady evidence in all cases. So it is unclear what the practical effect of temporarily removing an officer from this list would be if prosecutors must submit all related information to the defense anyway, list or no list, database or no database. My only guess is that it will cause confusion and possible delay. And lastly, if this bill is going to formalize the Brady list process, there should be an established process and requisite funding for the public to interact with these databases at some level, like a website with different levels of access for the public and prosecution and defense. In closing, law enforcement and correctional officers are only as effective as they are trusted by the people they serve. Increasing transparency and access, improving definitions, and removing ambiguity will significantly improve this bill. And until those are kind of satisfied, we must urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Steve Zona, proponent, waiving his support. Florida State Fraternal Order of Police. Thank you. Natalie Cato wishes to speak from Criminal Law Section of the Florida Bar.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Trunow, Vice Chair Barnaby, members of the committee. My name is Natalie Cato, and I'm here today on behalf of the Criminal Law Section of the Florida Bar. We consist of prosecutors, defense attorneys, both public and private, and judges, and the role of this section of the bar is to foster a high standard of ethical conduct in all attorneys who participate in the criminal justice system. I think it's important to remember that our section represents both prosecutors and defense attorneys because we are unanimously is a section opposed to this bill today. As I told Representative Duggan when I met with him, it's very rare to see prosecutors and defense attorneys agree on anything, so this is sort of a feat. So congratulations, Representative. For us, we have specific concerns about separation of powers between the legislative branch and the executive branch within this bill, as well as how this bill could negatively impact the ethical obligations of attorneys. So while the bill does contemplate that the duties under Brady, under the Supreme Court, of both the state and also under the U.S. Supreme Court and also the federal rules of procedure, or the rules of criminal procedure, are not impacted, it does not contemplate the Florida rules of professional conduct. So as a chief example, the rules of professional conduct delineate the special responsibilities of a prosecutor, including the timely disclosure of the defense of to the defense of all evidence or information that could negate the guilt of the accused or mitigate the offense. And it's unclear under this bill how a prosecutor should handle these disclosures when the officer in question is challenging their inclusion on the list. It's also unclear whether the prosecuting attorney will be required to share their written policies under the legislation with defense counsel or with the court, and that's something I think that we would like to see. And finally, our concern related to separation of powers arises from the language which requires prosecutors to develop written policies in consultation with other agencies. We'd just like to see a little more clarity there. And so for these reasons, we're opposed to the bill today, but we look forward to working with the bill sponsor and other stakeholders to address our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no other testimony, anyone else would like to speak? Seeing no others, we are in debate. Anyone would like to debate on the bill, members? Ranking Member Raynor Goolsbee, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Duggan, I know that we didn't have an opportunity to talk through this bill before, but would love to have a conversation with you. I want to level set. I am a career criminal defense attorney and civil rights attorney, so I do believe in due process. I believe that everyone should have due process, especially if your name is going to go on a list that could affect your career, could affect the way that you feed your family, could affect that your credibility in the community. So I do want to level set with that. However, the bill as drafted today, I'm not going to be able to support it. I do know that there have been some conversations for it to possibly be amended. I want to look at lines 176 through, I think, 183. I think that, you know, when we're thinking about the request for reconsideration, it seems that there is no actual time frame that is there. I understand an officer should have that right to request reconsideration if his or her name is going to be on this list, but it seems to be indeterminate. It seems to be that there's no actual guardrails to protect that. But then going to the point that was made by one of the speakers, if you go to lines 212 through 215, how does where there's still the prosecuting agency still has to produce this evidence according to the law, how does that, there seems to be ambiguity on how that actually works in the process. Also, I have concerns because not every agency has a Brady list, right? And so if not every agency has a Brady list, how does this, you know, look for the Sixth Circuit, which doesn't keep a Brady list, but the 13th does, right? Or the 9th does. And so I do think that, I know that other states have had task force where they've had prosecutors, law enforcement, members of the law enforcement community, and also defense attorneys come together and develop uniform procedures on how to do this. Also, I do have an issue in your bill that it requires the prosecuting agency to have a written notice policy with the officer, which I agree with, but requires the prosecuting agency to come up with that policies with agencies who represent law enforcement officers. So it is analogous for me as a criminal defense attorney sitting down with a prosecutor saying, I want you to give me input on how I deal with my criminal clients, criminal defendants. That, to me, that I think that doesn't seem to be able to to work together consistently. So while I do agree that there should be some uniformity in this process, that there needs to be a due process in place, because once again, I don't think that it's right for anyone to be on some list and they don't know how they got on it or what that looks like. The bill as written today is just a little bit ambiguous for me. So I will be down on this bill. That doesn't mean that as it moves through the process that I won't be up, but I would like to see a little bit of some changes in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jacques, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for presenting this bill. As a former state prosecutor, I had the absolute honor. It was the honor of a lifetime to work with members of law enforcement, men and women who do such an important and dangerous job. These are great folks, people who run towards danger when most of us would run away from it. And so to me, I think this policy does the right thing. It does right by these individuals, because these are people who are doing an extremely difficult thing. And for them to be put on a list and for them to have no say in the matter is truly, quite frankly, un-American, and certainly is offensive given the fact that they've taken that oath to protect and serve and to have no kind of say on a thing that will damage their professional track. And so I urge my colleagues to vote up on this because it's very important for a number of reasons. Number one, in a time when you're seeing record amounts of anti-cop rhetoric across this country, this is important to a recruitment perspective. You're seeing a lot of men and women in law enforcement are retiring early. They're not wanting to go into the profession. And Florida, to Florida's credit, under our great governor, we've set the tone that you're welcome here. And we want to be a very law enforcement-friendly state for you to do your work. And so this will help with that effort to continue to bring great men and women to our state, both homegrown and those who want to relocate from certain states and jurisdictions who don't appreciate their great work. So this will be great for public safety in that aspect, and it will be great for these individuals and their careers so that they may be able to do the work without being on some sort of a list, without having a say in the matter. I would hate to see a situation when you have some of these prosecutors who get elected, the term has been used, the woke prosecutors or Soros-backed, whatever, who have some kind of anti-cop rhetoric. I would hate for them to be able to weaponize Brady lists on our brave men and women in law enforcement. And for that reason, I will be up on the bill, and I encourage my colleagues to be up on it as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I practice largely in Broward County, where we do have a Brady list, and the prosecutors honor their ongoing obligation. I also practice in federal court, and it's interesting because in federal court, at each first appearance, and even when the case switches from the magistrate in criminal court to the judge, they give a Brady admonition to the government. And I don't think that goes away simply by the operation of this bill. I like the bill, Chair Duggan. You and I have spoke about it. And the reason I like it is, I think as a legislator, we have an obligation. I said it yesterday in committee, where we serve many masters. Okay, so I deal with the unions all the time. I represent law enforcement, and they are my constituents. And as a criminal defense attorney, obviously, I represent the accused. And in this situation, an officer is both the accused and an officer. There are provisions of the bill that I've discussed with you and with FACDL and other organizations. I have not been approached by the bar, so I didn't know their position until today. Would have been nice to know. But I do have a problem at lines 49 to 50 a little bit, as Jonathan Weber from Southern Poverty Law Center said. Although I don't necessarily have the same angst that they do, I think the definitions could be a little bit more clear. I will tell you, as a criminal defense lawyer, I like that subpart D is kind of all-encompassing and nebulous. To be perfectly honest, I think it could be tightened up. I do have a problem with at line 178, where it says must, meaning that in the reconciliation process, as I want to echo the sentiments of my ranking member, Michelle Rayner, I think there has to be some process there, and you and I spoke about this early this morning, Because if somebody simply appeals it, and that appeal could go on indefinitely, I think there really has to be a process. But as you said to me this morning, it's still a work in progress. It's likely to be amended. I appreciate that, and I'm going to vote up on it today.
Thank you. Seeing no other debate, Representative Duggan, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate everybody's comments on both sides of the issue. I will frame this as observing that this isn't really a criminal justice policy bill, believe it or not. This is a labor and employment bill. This is about providing protections for our law enforcement officers. I couldn't improve on what Representative Jock, on his summary and analysis and summary of what we're trying to protect against here. And I will give you an example because several folks have reached out to me, our public defender, for example, and I discussed with the FOP the following hypothetical. Officer gets accused of some misconduct. If the bill is in place, I have to go through this analysis with the prosecutor. If the prosecutor finds by clear and convincing evidence, or does not find by clear and convincing evidence that the officer should go on the Brady list, they don't go on the list. But they will still have the ethical obligation, the constitutional obligation, the rules of professional conduct and criminal procedure obligation to disclose that evidence to the defendant and to the defense counsel. And I said, so I asked the FOP, are you sure that you're comfortable with that? Because the officer wasn't placed on the list, but they still have the obligation, the professional obligation, to tell it to the defense. And the answer is yes, we're fine. We're not trying to short circuit that. We just want to give the officer the protection of a set of criteria that could put him on a list and a mechanism to discuss being placed on the list, knowledge that they're on a list, because some circuits don't even tell the officer, and a way to have a conversation about getting off the list. That's really all we're trying to accomplish here. And I actually, the comments from the SPLC, to me, illustrate the need for the list. Because there were allegations about officers who are accused of excessive use of force. Well, that's extremely subjective. And if you have a state attorney that wants to put an officer on a list without even telling them for that, that becomes a mark against that officer that they may not even know about. Or if they do know about it, it may be difficult for them to get off the list in that circuit. And you also heard for a request for public access to the list with that officer's name. And I didn't bring it up, but it's been raised, the issue of woke prosecutors and cancel culture by implication. Right, do we want to have a situation where an officer is accused of excessive use of force and put on a public list? What do you think is going to happen to that officer? All we're trying to say is give them a vehicle to have a discussion about getting off the list. With that, I close.
Thank you, Representative Duggan. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 95 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis has been excused. Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael has been excused. Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
No.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkowski?
Yes.
Chair Trunow?
Yes.
15 yeas, one nay, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 95 reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you. The next bill for consideration today is HB 603, Exploitation of Vulnerable Persons by Representative Lamarca. Representative Lamarca, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Trunow, Vice Chair Barnaby and Ranking Member Rainer Goolsbee and members of the committee. The silver tsunami is coming. About 20% of Florida's population is 65 or older, which is the highest percentage in the nation. There's an estimated 5 million cases of elder abuse annually, and it is estimated that elder abuse affects 10% of Americans older than 60 years old. The victims of elder abuse will rise as the numbers of adults over the age of 65 will nearly double in the coming years. As the law in Florida is currently written, Florida does not offer strong protections to its elderly population. Over the next 20 years, older Americans will transfer $70 trillion as they enter retirement. The transfer of this wealth will provide a catastrophic opportunity for financial exploitation of the elderly. HB 603 prohibits the exploitation of a person 65 years of age or older by obtaining or using through deception or intimidation the property of a person 65 years or older with the intent to deprive that person of the use, benefit, and possession of property to benefit someone other than the property owner, or by violating their intent as expressed in a will, trust, instrument, or testamentary device by a person with a fiduciary duty, the person 65 years or older, and by means of bribery or kickbacks, a person 65 years or older of his or her tangible right to honest services provided by a person with whom she or he has a legal fiduciary relationship. The bill provides that if the funds, assets, or property involved in the exploitation are valued at $50,000 or more, the offender would commit a first-degree felony. $10,000 to $50,000, the offender would commit a second-degree felony. And under $10,000, the offender commits a third-degree felony. And important to note, these penalties match the current penalties in the statute for grand theft of a person 65 years of age, which is 812.0145. And Florida's current statute sets a difficult bar for prosecutors that have been, and there have been less than 30 cases brought under the current statute since its enactment in 1995. Rounding third base here, the current Florida elder exploitation statute has three deficiencies. Many elderly victims are not prosecuted by current statute, and the bill provides protection for all Floridians over the age of 65, like 24 other states in the District of Columbia, whose criminal exploitation statutes protect everyone over a set age. Number two, the current statute does not cover a key category of perpetrators. The bill includes provision that targets the professional advisors who abuse their position of trust and confidence using firmly established legal principles. And finally, the current statute does not give victims and prosecutors enough time to act. This bill would extend the statute limitations period to specify that if the five-year limitation period has expired, prosecution of the fraud may be commenced within 5 years after discovery of the offense. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, having presented this bill. Any questions? Any questions? No questions? Are there any amendments on the bill? No. Is there any public testimony on the bill? We have Libby Guzzo, Office of Attorney General, waiving in support. We have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waiving in support. That is all the public testimony. Anyone else wish to speak? Okay, we are now in debate. Any debate on the bill? Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's a good bill. I've been practicing criminal law for 30 years. I have two exploitation cases that I'm defending right now. I'm going to vote up on it, and I did speak with Rep. LaMarca, and I know he's aware of my concerns. My concerns are the paragraph at 151 to 156. I've tried very serious cases within 6 months or within 9 months, so I understand the need, given the elderly and infirm nature of some of the victims in these cases, to move that time up. I just want there to be some guardrail so that we still have due process with the defendant's right to properly prepare to go to trial. And I think that in there, you know, if it, it says that the judge may move it up, so I'm glad that it's permissive as opposed to mandatory. But I think that there should just, that we can hopefully land, and I know Rep. LaMarca, you said you're willing to work with me on that, if we can find some kind of guardrail there so that a judge doesn't say, okay, you're going to trial tomorrow, even though you haven't had a proper opportunity for the accused to go through discovery. So I'll vote up on it today, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you. Representative, ranking member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative LaMarca, I do appreciate this bill. You and I haven't had an opportunity to speak about it, but I do appreciate it as someone who is a caretaker of my mother, who is elderly. She's 78, and I have had to fight off folks who are trying to exploit her. She owns her house outright, and folks who are literally trying to rob her of her home. And so I appreciate this bill. I think it is needed. I represent a community that is elderly as well, in Pinellas. I do would agree with Representative Gottlieb. I think that there should be the ability to expedite trial. However, I would just like to maybe see something in the bill that would talk about if a court should expedite the trial, what that timeline should look like. Other than that, I think that this bill does what it needs to do. I will be voting up on this bill. And once again, thank you for bringing it.
Thank you. Seeing no other debate, Representative Lamarca, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, thank you for your comments. Ranking Member, I also have a mother who's a very young 78, and this is an issue not just around our state, but specifically in areas of high elderly population. So appreciate everyone's comments and look forward to your support in the bill.
Thank you. Representative Lamarca, having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 603 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis has been excused. Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Oh, sorry. Said it early, yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael has been excused. Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkowski?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Show HB 603 reported favorably. Congratulations. The next bill for consideration today is HB 329, electronic monitoring of persons charged with or convicted of offenses involving schools or students by Representative Maggard. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Vice Chair Barnaby and ranking members and the members of the subcommittee. I'm honored to present HB 329, an act relating to electronic monitoring of persons charged with or convicted of offenses involving schools or students. This bill requires the courts to consider penalties of electronic monitoring and a ban on being within 1,000 foot of a school for those that make threats against our schools and our students while they are at school. Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions on the bill? Members, questions? Seeing no questions, are there any amendments? We have one amendment by Representative Maggard. Amendment barcode 196221. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment revises the definition of school in the bill to include post-secondary schools, as well as the grounds facilities of any school. It also clarifies and simplifies the definition in this bill, included are technical changes that were needed for the clarity and recommended by staff. And that is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the amendment? Questions? Do we have any public testimony? No, seeing no public testimony on the amendment. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak on the amendment? Are there any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative Maggard, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close.
Waiving closed. All in favor of adopting the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All opposed? By your vote, the amendment is adopted. Back on the bill as amended. Are there any public appearance cards? Okay, we have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, proponent. Wave in support. Thank you. Seeing no other public testimony, anyone wishing to testify? Seeing none. Are there any members that wish to debate on the bill? Seeing no one wishing to debate, Representative Maggard, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Well, thank you, members. Hope I can get your support. This is just one more tool to help our students and our kids. And I look forward for your support. That is all, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Maggard. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 329 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis has been excused. Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael has been excused. Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner Goolsbee?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkovsky?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 329 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next bill for consideration today is HB 165, Controlled Substance Testing, by Representative Honchowski. Representative Honchowski, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Trunow, for adding this to the agenda. Thank you, Vice Chair Barnaby, Ranking Member Rayner Goolsbee, and all the members of the committee. So House Bill 165 is pretty simple. What it does is it legalizes fentanyl test strips in the state of Florida. And it is considered another tool in the harm reduction toolbox. I know there exists still quite a stigma in our society about harm reduction. And my reason for bringing this bill forward is not because someone, a lobbyist brought it to me or somebody's trying to do something. It's because I know too many people whose loved ones have died from fentanyl overdoses. Fentanyl test strips are shown to be a successful harm reduction tool. And they do not encourage people to do drugs. They do not prevent people from doing drugs. The goal is to prevent people from dying from drugs. And that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, are there any amendments on the bill? Seeing no amendments on the bill, is there any public testimony? Jennifer Webb, Floridians Recovery Movement, proponent, wishes to speak.
Good morning, representatives. I stand here before you because I've been called to advocate on behalf of family members and folks who are in recovery for this bill. There's a saying that I've come to use is, where there's life, there's hope. And that's what this bill is about. It's about keeping people alive so that they can get into recovery. But actually, the reverse is equally true, that you can't get into recovery if you're dead. And unfortunately, that's the phrase that I don't like to share because it's a painful reminder and statement for too many families, including my own. I was someone who was actually pretty strident against harm reduction measures. I didn't understand it. I thought, well, they shouldn't be doing drugs anyway. I was really judgmental, and I was wrong. And my perspective changed. And unfortunately, my perspective changed after I lost my baby sister to the opioid crisis. And we were a family that doesn't happen to our family. That happens to other people. We gave her all of the treatment money could buy. You know, I mean, there was nothing that we wouldn't have done to help her get into recovery, except I was all but supportive when she talked about harm reduction strategies. And my story is not uncommon. In Florida, in 2021, about 6,000 people died from fentanyl poisoning, from overdoses involving fentanyl. That's almost 90% of the overdoses, not the drug-involved deaths, but the actual drug overdoses. And so I appreciate Rep. Honchowski's statement that this is about saving lives. This is about making sure that people can stay alive long enough in order to get into recovery. And I'd like to conclude with a story from a mother I talked to yesterday, and she said, you know, my son was 15 when he borrowed an Adderall pill from a friend at school so that he could stay up studying, and that pill killed him because it wasn't Adderall, it was fentanyl, and he didn't have any Narcan or anything nearby because he wasn't a heroin addict or a fentanyl addict. He was a kid who was trying to stay up studying, and those are the kids that this bill will save kids that might make poor decisions, but they don't deserve to die because of it. And thank you for your time, and thank you for your favorable vote.
Thank you for your testimony. Also, you represent Live Tampa Bay. Thank you. Next is Devin West, Broward Addiction Recovery Center, waiving in support. Nisha Rose Hines, ACLU of Florida, waiving in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waiving in support. Andrew Rutledge, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, waiving in support. Ashley Richardson, Florida Public Defenders Association, waiving in support. Mary Beth Creighton, proponent, wishes to speak. I messed up your last name, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of this committee. My name is Mary Beth Creighton, and I'm one of the brokenhearted mothers out there. I lost my son, Zachary, to accidental fentanyl poisoning this past December in West Palm Beach. Unfortunately, he was alone in his condo when he died. Zach is not just a statistic. You know, he's one of the tens of thousands dying in this country of fentanyl. Over 280 people die a day. That's like a major plane crash, or to put it another way, every 8.5 minutes. It's the number one cause of death for age 18 to 45. And I know people care, and I know people across all of the political perspective spectrum agree that this is a crisis and that we need to fight. And I'm on a crusade here today in the name of my son, Zach, in supporting this bill to save lives. Zach was a beautiful soul, an appliance tech. He had his AA degree and multiple certifications, a former auto mechanic. He had just renewed the lease of his condo that he loved, paid his car off, paid his bills, loved cars and coffee and Drive Shack and mini golf and skateboarding and dogs and the beach. He was not a partier. Unfortunately, he became addicted to prescription pain medication years ago in Maryland, where he grew up after a major snowboarding injury and reconstructive surgery of his shoulder. He was living a beautiful life of recovery here in Florida for about 4 years. Unfortunately, he faltered, and he doesn't have that chance to get back into recovery because of this lethal fentanyl. And I share his story because there is still a stigma about people who have a substance use disorder like Zach, and that has to stop. Substance use does not discriminate. Fentanyl does not discriminate. And as you heard, it's even affecting young people who may for the first time be taking something for anxiety or depression or to get through a test or experimenting. And even children now are susceptible to this because of fentanyl that looks like candy. So we need a multifaceted approach, of course, from criminal prosecution to stopping the drugs from getting out there, and better treatment and recovery. But this bill could save lives. And that's why I'm here today. It's time for Florida, and along with the other 35 states, to pass this bill to save lives and give people a chance to either get back into recovery or stop experimenting, get help. I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. We are moving into debate. Anyone wish to debate? Ranking member, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pomchowski, I don't know if you're aware of this, that today is Fentanyl Awareness Day. And I happened to see a tweet from a mayor of Albuquerque talking about how fentanyl has left many of friends, families, neighbors, and grieving loved ones just this past November, I lost one of my dearest friends to a fentanyl overdose. She had been in recovery. She had five beautiful children, the youngest being 6 years old. And I had reached out to me the day before she overdosed, and I missed her phone call. Comes from a wonderful family. Father serves in the church. Her stepmother does as well. I think that, you know, to Ms. Creighton's point, you know, addiction has no race. It has no economic class. It has no partisanship. It touches all of us in different ways. And I do want to thank Ms. Creighton for sharing your story, sharing your son's story. Thank you for being here. Representative Webb, thank you for being here as well. This is a really important bill. I think that it destigmatizes a lot of what's going on. I understand that there needs to be a range of solutions, but I think that harm reduction is real. People are using, unfortunately, and there are people who are dying. And I would rather someone be here to have the opportunity to get their life back together, to recover, to live a beautiful life of recovery, a beautiful life of redemption. So I appreciate you bringing this bill. Also, it's not lost on me that it is Fentanyl Awareness Day. And so I think that this is appropriate, and I will be voting up on this bill. And I encourage all the members on this committee to vote up on this bill as well.
Thank you. Seeing no other debate, Representative Honchowski, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Representative Webb, and I want to thank Zach's mom. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for putting this on the agenda, and I ask all of you for your favorable support.
Thank you. Representative Honchowski, having closed on her bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 165 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis has been excused. Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael has been excused. Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yurikoski?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Show HB 165 reported favorably. Congratulations. The last bill for consideration today is HB 319, Interference with Sporting or Entertainment Events, by Representative Yurikoski. Representative Yurikoski, you are recognized to present your bill with your clothes on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, committee, for this, to be able to present this bill here today. As you saw, we just unanimously passed four bills, and so I'm hoping to keep that streak alive here today. But shut down another streak at the same time. That's not doing us a lot of good things in our community right now. I want to thank Representative Baker, Representative Edmonds for co-sponsoring this bill. That shows the bipartisan support, and that this is not about politics. This is about family values. It's about public safety. It's about protecting premises and performers, athletes that are dealing with this ridiculous behavior. We have a problem in our sporting arenas and in concert venues, et cetera, where bad actors are hijacking these moments and these events for indecent exposure and, most importantly, corrupt financial gain. This is not like when we were in college and somebody got drunk and ran across the field on a dare. That's not what this is about. This is calculated, and bad actors are paying money, a lot of money, to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars in certain events to hijack these moments. And that's not what this country's about. You know, folks save their money, bring their kids to these events, support these events, and this is not the place to be doing this stuff. So my bill here today, HB 319, We're going to stiffen the penalties on not only the perpetrator, but the solicitor or payer of this ridiculous behavior. And we are also going to define what those events are and the time in which those events take place and how we're going to apply this. And I want to be clear, we are not attacking celebratory tradition in sports. That is not what this is about. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, are there any amendments? We have one amendment, amendment barcode 613215. Representative Yarkoski, you are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to just read real quick what this amendment does. It does two things. Again, as I said, we are defining when this law can be applied, and that is that is from the time that the venue is held open to the public for the event until the conclusion of the athletic event or competition performance. It references existing statutory language for the crimes of battery and trespass to more clearly identify what conduct is prohibited. It creates a third-degree felony if a person solicits another person to violate the provisions of this bill by offering that person money or something of value. The person that commits the violation will remain subject to a first-degree misdemeanor, not a felony, first-degree misdemeanor, and we are enhancing that fine to $2,500 and up to 1 year in jail. Currently, it's a $500 fine, third-degree misdemeanor, and it's kind of a trespass, which, as you can imagine, are not hardly enforced at this point, which is why this is continuing to happen. And then the most important part of this, in my opinion, is this requires that a forfeiture of any profit or benefit gained by or payable to a person for violating the provisions of the bill be subject to the procedures of the Florida Contraband Forfeiture Act. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the amendment.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Representative Costello, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Rep, what if the streaker is not getting compensated? Does he still fall under all these guidelines that you're putting in place?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Great question. The answer is the streaker is still going to be subject to the misdemeanor charge and the additional fine. What would not apply in that case is, you know, if someone's egging them on or encouraging them to do this or it's a dare, that person would not be charged with a felony in this case unless they paid something of value. For instance, you know, they're doing these TikTok challenges for $1,000 for someone that could run across the field. That's the stuff we're trying to stop. As we know as legislators, if we stop the money, you oftentimes pretty much stop the problem. So we're trying to go after the bad actors that are enticing this with money and things of value and not just, you know, that kind of behavior. I mean, we are going to stiffen the penalties on that, but that's really, you know, that's not where the felony issues are.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Seeing no other questions, do we have any public testimony? We have no public testimony on the amendment. Any members wishing to debate on the amendment? No. Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Yarkoski, you know I like the bill. You and I have had numerous conversations, and in fact, you amended it based on those conversations, and I appreciate that. I still have an issue as to lines 45 and 46, as we talked about this morning. Specifically, there's a U.S. Supreme Court case from 2018, Timms versus a Land Rover. And what that case stands for is the proposition that, it talks specifically about a fine of four times more than the maximum criminal punishment is excessive under the Eighth Amendment, and we need to be protected from government overreach. And I understand that that might be a stumbling block in how this bill is intended to act. I'd like to see some changes made, and I know you said you're willing to do that. So as it relates to that, I think it should just say what it says in 48 to 50, subject to seizure and forfeiture as provided in the Florida Contraband Forfeiture Act. Looking forward to working with you as we move forward.
Seeing no other debate, Representative Yarkoski, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. And I want to thank you, Rep. Gottlieb, for your help. I want to tell everyone what he and I have done on this is exactly what's great about what we do here every day. And we work together, and it led to this amendment because our job, in my opinion, is to get it right. And so I believe that we're getting there, and I think this is going to be great. It already is great policy. We're going to make it even better when we finish this. That being said, I want to close by saying that, again, like I said in the beginning, family values, public safety, protecting these businesses and premises, and protecting folks from injury. You know, these athletes are now getting roped into this. We're seeing in the news that they're taking people down, you know, or they're getting injured in this process. And, you know, to add insult to injury, then these perpetrators are suing the premises, the owners of the arenas, they're suing the athletes. And it's just, it's out of control. So what we're doing here is just stopping the money, stopping the bad actors. And I want to just say, to show the wide support that we have on this bill, I just want to read this to you really quick. And these are some folks that have reached out to me in support: Disney's Wild World of Sports, Dr. Phillips Performing Arts Center, Florida Sports Foundation, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, Jacksonville Jaguars, Miami Dolphins, Miami Marlins, National Football League, Orlando City Soccer, Orlando Magic, Tampa Bay Bucks, and the Tampa Bay Rays. So everyone in Florida is dealing with this, and they actually have staff now that's assigned to just watch for this and stop this stuff. And with your vote here today, I think we can stop this and codify this, and so we don't have this issue anymore in our state. And I appreciate your support. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I close on the bill.
Having closed on the amendment,
if you
are in favor of the adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay. Opposed? By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony? We have an appearance card. Barney Bishop from Florida Smart Justice Alliance waving his support. Seeing no other testimony, we are in debate. Any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate on the bill, Representative Yarkoski, you are recognized to close on your bill.
I will wave close since I think I did a great job on that amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1319, and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracey Davis has been excused. Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael has been excused. Plakin?
Yes.
Rainer Goolsby?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Trunell?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 319 reported favorably. The streak is alive. That concludes the agenda for today's meeting. Members, if there is no further business, Representative Garcia moves we rise. Without objection, this meeting is adjourned.